All right. Welcome back. Thanks for being along. 11:04 on Rogers TV and 570 News. Coming up at 11:35, Richard Walsh is Waterloo Green Party candidate. We'll talk about the Green Party of Canada. Their leader, Elizabeth May, are at a crossroads, it seems. May is vacationing right now, contemplating her future with the Green Party of Canada as leader. So that's coming up in other news as well with producer Jeff Pickle at noon. Let's talk about something you just heard during the newscast here. Cambridge Mayor Doug Craig announcing that he is voluntarily removing himself from this multiplex task force. This is something that's been, of course, controversial. The proposed plans to build this large multi-use sports complex at Conestoga College's Cambridge campus. The project was said to be a done deal before a very vocal group of citizens rallied for City Hall to rethink the location of this multiplex. We've talked about it on the show many, many times. Cambridge Mayor Doug Craig taking time this morning, joining us on the show. Good morning to you. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you very much.
So why are you removing yourself?
Well, you know, there has been, you know, a press release and concern in the community about our procedural bylaw that, in fact, that the mayor, with regards to being an ex officio in all committees, that there, in fact, is a loophole in our bylaw. And so instead of, you know, pursuing this publicly, staying on the task force, creating more controversy, it simply would have become a sideshow, which would have detracted from the legitimacy of the committee. I want this committee, which is the task force dealing with where we're going to locate the sportsplex, to move ahead. So does council. So if I step back and remove myself at this point until the bylaws cleaned up, then in fact the process is legitimate, it continues, and people can't claim it's rigged when they get an outcome they may not like. So I think that's the important aspect. Mm-hmm. So I've done that, and I have to get clarification from council in late September about the bylaw, and then we'll deal with that at that time.
I want to just clarify something, if you don't mind. I'm reading in the paper this morning that there seemed to be a pretty heated debate between somebody that was there and City Manager Gary Dyke and about this procedural bylaw that you're talking about. I want to be clear. You are allowed to be under the bylaw. You are allowed to be on this task force, right?
Well, that is correct. I'm allowed in terms of sort of the history and tradition that mayor is ex officio on all committees, all task force, but our bylaw isn't clear enough about that. So, you know, I don't want this to continue. I don't want the controversy on this. Like I said, it becomes a sideshow and it detracts from what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is to have a process, a legitimate process that's balanced, that will come up with four or five recommended sites that will then come publicly. The public will feel comfortable that things have been vetted properly and nothing is going to distract them from it. Mm. And I think my removal is the right thing to do at this time until I get the bylaw clarified in September.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it just, to me, again, based on what I read this morning and my understanding of this, it seems like you're taking one for the team here, even though you don't have to be, if you will.
All mayors take one for the team, trust me, on many, many issues.
Okay.
You know what? The people expect out of a mayor.
Right.
I mean, we're here to be community leaders. We're here to be above the fray, and we're here to set the examples. And all mayors do this sort of thing. And it's the right thing to do at the right time. My council understands that. You know, I want this to come back. And, you know, this whole issue, when it does formulate and comes back to site location, is really going to come down to money and what this community can afford. There's a sort of a feeling out there that, you know, we can afford $125 million for the sportsplex. No, we can't. We're in around the $75 million range. And if we delay this project another 2, 3, 4 years, if we pick a much more expensive site, then all of that money comes out of the complex, which means there's going to be less swimming facilities, less gyms, less ice pads, and so on. And we got to put that out there properly. That's what I hope council will do.
Did you ever see this becoming such a huge controversial issue?
Well, I don't understand the reaction to Conestoga College. I mean, these are our kids. There's from Cambridge, anyways. There's about 1,200 students out there, and it would have been a shared facility for them in the daytime when it's at its least use. It's in the city of Cambridge. It's not in Kitchener, as somebody proposed or are saying. It's not going to be used used by Kitchener residents exclusively, because all the times and the tournaments and everything would have been Cambridge first in terms of the lineup for them. And it would have been the most feasible site for money in terms of what we could afford to give the community all the components it wanted. Now it's in limbo. I didn't foresee this to be such a negative reaction, but there was a lot of misinformation. I was getting people calling me saying, why are you building this in Kitchener? Things like that. And that was terrible. So we're trying to sort that out now. That's why I want this process to continue in the fashion it's now continuing. It's a good committee. It's got good people on it. It's got a great chair, Mr. Chris Smith, who's chairing it. And I don't think there's any question in terms of the fact that everything is being vetted properly. Mm.
The multi, the task force, just for our listeners who don't know, two council members, two city staff, six members of the public, and that's aside from you, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. And so, so let me ask you this. I mean, looking ahead here, this task force was, why don't I ask you, what was the purpose of the task force being formed in the first place?
Well, I think the most important thing is the fact that people were claiming that we weren't transparent. We hadn't done things properly. Actually, we had. People just didn't know what was going on because the fact that, that it really got a low exposure in the news media at the time. And so you ended up having this controversy, and the decision was made, okay, let's have a task force, let's set it up, let's get community members on it, and that's exactly what we've done. And as you've pointed out very clearly, the balance is towards the community members in terms of the membership. So they will come back to us, four or five of locations. Conestoga would be one of them because it's already a motion of council, and council will publicly then look at those and decide on the best. And each of those sites will in fact have the information as to how long it will take to secure, how much it will cost, is there expropriation, is there contamination, what will be the end cost, and what will be the end result in terms of components being taken out of the sportsplex if it's delayed for a period of time. All of that will be put out for each of the sites, and then the public has a clear vision.
What do you believe, realistically, are the chances that Conestoga College will not end up being the site of this multiplex?
Well, I think right now, I mean, I keep saying this, and it hasn't really sort of been, you know, it's something that I want the public to understand. This is coming down to money. How much money is this community able to afford? And we've been saying we budgeted around $75, $78 million. And if we go beyond that, that means that other projects, like the proposed dam in Preston, will not be built. It will mean that roadworks down in the former Galt area of Cambridge will not be built, etc. You can't just keep expanding the cost of the sportsplex at the exposure and risk of the rest of the community. That's what I will not allow to happen. The Chamber of Commerce has come out publicly and said they cannot support this if it gets out of control in terms of money.
Greg DeRocher was on this very show talking about that. Yeah, and they certainly have. Here's the thing. I really hope that people understand what you're saying. I really do, because at the end of the day, I mean, you know, here we are. And if the people think that this is okay, I mean, I'm not sure that all the information is out there and that people truly understand. And maybe that's been part of the problem from the very get-go.
I would agree with you. I've said that. I mean, if there's a communication issue, that's my responsibility and my fault. Okay?
Right.
And I said that publicly in the beginning, that we would try to do a better job. We're doing that better job. But people have to understand, you know, yes, I can build this downtown in a central location. You're going to have to wait 6-7 years until I assemble all the land, pay for all the expropriation, pay for all the contamination. And in the end, you're not going to have four ice pads. You may only have one. You're not going to have two pools. You're only going to get one. Instead of three gyms, you might get two. That's the end result. We got to be careful here about what people want and in terms of what we can afford.
So just on a final note here, do you think you stepping down from this task force is going to make make people happy for the most part. I mean, as you say, it probably would have become a bit of a distraction. You're right. I mean, the mayor is on the task force, right?
It's a sideshow. And I don't want that. So we've eliminated that right now. I don't want the Donald Trump factor to become part of this, where if people don't get what they want, they claim it's rigged.
Right.
It's not rigged. This is a proper process with good citizens on it that have great integrity.
All right. Thanks for your time. Enjoy the HIP show this weekend, okay?
Oh, for sure. I'll be there.
Take care. Cambridge Mayor Doug Craig right there talking about the task force. Speaking of Donald Trump, the news today, turns out he's got regrets about some of the things that he said. Okay. We're not on Donald Trump. Your thoughts on this? The mayor of Cambridge is saying, look, I some people were complaining, you know, they formed this task force and the mayor has a spot on this task force under the procedural bylaws, I guess. He is allowed to, my understanding is that he's allowed to be on this task force. This is coming from the record this morning. The city's procedural bylaw available on the city's website state that the mayor, quote, is an ex officio member of all standing committees who, when attending a standing committee meeting, shall have full voting privileges and shall be counted for the purpose of the standing committee's quorum. It also states the mayor, quote, may be an ex officio member of each committee to which the mayor is not specifically named. So the committee or any kind of similar entity is defined by being 50% council members. And this particular multiplex task force has two council members, two city staff, and six members of the public aside from the mayor now. So he has voluntarily removed himself from this task force, which means that stepping down, he will no longer have any voting privileges. And some community members have come out and said that this would have been conflict or the mayor is on it, shouldn't be on it. Is this going to help? Is this going to help by the mayor voluntarily removing himself from this task force? Phone lines are open, 519-570-2545, *570 on your cell. You can email into eric@570news.com. Here's Paul on the line. Hey, Paul, good morning to you. What do you say?
Yeah, good morning. Excuse me for being skeptical about what Mr. Craig says, but he forgot to mention one point, that about 4 months ago, they were ready to ink the deal with Conestoga College.
Yep.
Okay, the college was sitting there. They were at City Hall ready to sign the deal that evening, and there were about 400 people, caused a huge outcry, and here we are now. So
right.
You forgot to mention that fact, number one. Number two, he also handpicked Greg DeRocher to be on there, right? So now Greg DeRocher will be representing him that he stepped down. So I don't have a lot of faith in that as well. And it's very untrue what the mayor said about it costing. How could you... cost something at $75 million, yet 2 years later it's going to cost $80, $90 million, okay? That's ridiculous. And there's plenty of places to take the money out of. They're going to spend $2.5 million on a pedestrian bridge over top of the river that we don't even need, okay? They spent $7 million on renovating the old post office in Cambridge, right? So when he talks about this, there being some cost overruns, he's saying, oh, now you can't have a dam, you can't have necessary services. Well, you know what? You should cut some of the unnecessary services and the unnecessary things we don't need, Mr. Craig, and put that money towards the extra cost of the sports flights.
All right, Paul. Thanks for your phone call and your thoughts on that this morning. Yeah, look, and this is the thing, right? Everybody has an opinion and a different opinion on what's important, what's needed, how much things can cost, how much they're going to cost. I don't know. I mean, I think part of the problem has been communication all along. If it was all above board, so to speak, in terms of the information being readily available for everybody, and perhaps the media pushing it out more. I don't know. Is it true that things will become more expensive the longer we wait? Probably, yeah. I mean, the longer you wait to build something, it'll probably end up being more expensive. Plus, you know, there's the added cost of actually having to purchase land, if you will, here, as opposed to this lease at Conestoga College. But I think this has gotten to the point now that the mayor felt like he just had to do this because there was obviously going to be a lot of, screaming and hollering that the mayor was on the task force. So now he stepped down. Do you think does that change anything? Paul clearly doesn't think so, saying that Greg DeRocher is going to be representing him, who is the president of the Cambridge Chamber of Commerce. I mean, I don't know. How do you feel about that? It's 11:19. More of your thoughts after this on 570 News.
Put the smart in your smartphone. Download the 570 News app and stay informed. 570 News.
how much money is this community able to afford? And we've been saying we budgeted around $75, $78 million. And if we go beyond that, that means that other projects, like the proposed dam in Preston, will not be built.
We continue with the Eric Droz Show on 570 News.
All right, there is Cambridge Mayor Doug Craig talking to us moments ago about his decision to voluntarily step down and remove himself from this multiplex task force, which has been assembled for, and they've had, I think it's been about a handful of meetings so far this summer about various things, and they're going to be looking at surveys, engage Cambridge surveys people, giving them their thoughts on this multiplex. Of course, the issue here, the main issue being the location of the multiplex. Where should it be located? Should it be at the Conestoga College lands? Should it be somewhere more central to the city, to the folks in Cambridge? It's been going on for a while, and it has been. And Paul, by the way, who called in before the break, is absolutely right when he says that, multiple times on this show and in other interviews, officials have said that this is pretty much a done deal. It's a done deal, right? That was what people were upset about. That, you know, they said that it was a done deal, and people felt like it wasn't like not enough information was out there, and not enough consultation happened, and so on and so forth. And was it a communication problem? Perhaps was there actually not enough done? Some people believe that, and some people say no, there has been. It's just, perhaps people haven't been following the story. How do you feel about it? 519-570-2545, *570 on your cell. You can email into eric@570news.com your thoughts on the mayor stepping down from this task force on the multiplex project. Do you think it will help the kind of the image, if you will? I don't know. I mean, part of me gets what the mayor is doing. I get it. You don't want this side show of, the mayor is on the task force. How can this possibly be, down the middle, if you will, even though that there are many other members and more civilian members on this task force than counselors or city staff. So part of me understands that in terms of, not wanting to distract from the issues at hand. But part of me also, from what I understand of the procedural bylaws here, the mayor didn't have to step down. Under these procedural bylaws, what I'm reading here, the mayor can have a spot on a task force like this, and can have a vote, and can be on the task force. So it almost seems like, I don't want to call it giving up or giving in or whatever. But it seems to me like it didn't have to happen, and he's voluntarily doing it. So, I mean, I don't know. We're at the point now where this has been delayed for how long? I mean, we were talking about this well before the summer started. It's been probably over 6 months. The whole thing's been pushed back 6 months. We're hoping to get an answer on the vote and the college land lease sometime in October. Bottom line is, are we going to build this thing or not? It seems to be more up in the air than it's ever been now. And even after striking this task force, there are problems. So if striking a task force and trying to do it properly, quote unquote, and have all the information out there and be as transparent as possible is still leaving doubt in people's minds, like, at what point do you just say, okay, are we building this thing or not? the doubts will always be there. The doubts will always be there. They build this thing centrally, and people that wanted the original location are going to say, well, what the heck? And it's going to go back and forth. And at the end of the day, what do we elect our officials for? We elect people to make decisions on behalf of us, right? We expect it to be transparent. We expect it to be above board. And if there's a communication problem, like the mayor says, then that is on them, and that's fine. That's fine. But at some point, we got to make a decision. Are we building this thing or not? Because the delay and the time, I don't have numbers in front of me, but you can bet it's going to end up costing more. I don't know, the 75 to... Remember, when this thing started, it was what? $50 million? 52, I believe the number was. Like, it was a lot. And now we're up at 75. We got Greg DeRocher in the Cambridge Chamber of Commerce talking about that this isn't something that they've endorsed. They endorsed this at the original mark of 50 or 52 or whatever it was. Now it's ballooned to 75. I don't know, but we'll keep following it. Where it says, you know, sometime in October we should have an answer to this. By the way, the city did defer the vote on this. The land lease is 60-year. The 60-year land lease with the college in May, and said that they would look at these other sites. So that's what's happening, and we're expected to hear about it at some point in October. So that's that. Okay, when we come back, let's talk about Elizabeth May and the Green Party of Canada. Leader Elizabeth May, they're at a crossroads, it seems. A portion of the party and May find themselves at odds over support for a controversial agenda. The majority of about 250 members gathered for the party's convention voted in favor of a resolution supporting boycott and divestment and sanctions, BDS, a movement that aims to economically isolate the state of Israel. And in a statement, Elizabeth May said, quote, "As a leader, I am disappointed that the membership has adopted a policy in favor of a movement that I believe to be polarizing, ineffective, and unhelpful." And the statement goes on. We'll let you know more about that. And we'll speak with Richard Walsh. He's the Waterloo Green Party candidate. That's coming up next. It's the Eric Drell Show on Rogers TV and 570 News.
570 News brings you airborne traffic reports for your morning and afternoon commute with Daryl Dahmer on 570 News.
All right, we're back. It is 11:33. Thanks for being along. Coming up at noon, it is our In Other News segment with producer Jeff Pickle, who will be joining me in studio. There's a lot to go over, like, the latest on Ryan Lochte in Rio at the Olympics, where he was robbed, but not really robbed, as in he lied about the robbery. That never happened. And now he's out with a statement this morning. We'll bring that to you. And it's I find it just a fantastic, slightly off-putting, certainly humorous statement from Ryan Lochte. My goodness. We'll talk about that. Also, we'll probably throw Trump in there somewhere. Hey, Pickle, we'll probably throw Trump in there somewhere. Why not? Yeah, we'll see. Okay, so anyway. Anyway, that's coming up. Let's talk about the Green Party of Canada. Did you hear about this? The Green Party of Canada, their leader, Elizabeth May, seemed to be at a bit of a crossroads here. Portion of the party and May find themselves at odds over support of a controversial agenda. The majority of about 250 members gathered for the party's convention voted in favor of a resolution supporting boycott, divestment, and sanctions, BDS, a movement that aims to economically isolate the state of Israel. In a statement, here's what May said, quote, "As leader, I am disappointed that the membership has adopted a policy in favor of a movement that I believe to be polarizing, ineffective, and unhelpful in the quest for peace and security for the peoples of the Middle East," end quote. That's what she said. She added that she would, quote, "continue to express personal opposition to BDS," end quote. Richard Walsh, you know Richard Walsh, he is the Waterloo Green Party candidate, takes time this morning to join us on the show. Richard, good morning to you. How are you?
I am well, Eric, and yourself?
I'm doing quite well. Thanks again for your time. Let me start off by just getting your, let me get your overall thoughts on this. A lot of people were quite surprised by some of the things that that Elizabeth May has been saying about being the leader of the Green Party in terms of, you know, she expressed frustration in the Globe and Mail, said, quote, I don't love being the leader of the Green Party, calling it a thankless task devoid of any fun. What are your thoughts on all this?
Elizabeth has had a very difficult job being the leader of the party at the same time as representing a constituency on Vancouver Island. And since the 2015 election, roughly a year ago, less than a year ago, in which only one Green Party member was elected, namely herself, her position continues to be a rather lonely one in the House of Commons. So she's been under a great deal of stress professionally, given her status as the lone Green Party MP. So I certainly can empathize with how distressed her position is and how it would be for anybody in that role. On the other hand, it's clear that the appropriate democratic procedures were followed in the convention. I was there all day Friday and all day Saturday, but not on Sunday when the actual contested resolution came to the floor for a vote in a plenary session. Most of the party who was present at the meeting in Ottawa, and it's now 2 weeks ago, supported the resolution. And in fact, the resolution on boycott, divestment, and sanctions never would have made it to the convention floor if it hadn't gone through two previous steps. The first step, which pertains actually to any resolution that party members propose for consideration at a convention, consisted of the members receiving all the proposed resolutions and indicating their level of interest in those resolutions. And this particular resolution on boycott, divestment, and sanctions was strongly supported by the membership. So therefore, it went to the next step, which was a workshop. Now, I did attend that workshop. It occurred on Saturday morning. The actual vote occurred on Sunday morning, I believe. But I attended the Saturday morning workshop on it. And in that situation, yes, Elizabeth and several other Green Party members expressed their opposition to the resolution. But the overwhelming majority of the individuals in the workshop expressed their support for it. So when the resolution got to the convention floor for decision by all of the individuals attending convention, again, I understand, I wasn't present, but I understand that it was strongly supported. So we have a situation in the party where the leader is, in conscience, opposed to the resolution, and there is a significant minority of Green Party members who would agree with her. But the majority, and by that I mean at least two-thirds, of the membership strongly supports the resolution.
That's a tough spot to be in if you're the leader, though.
That's right. That was my initial point. I can certainly identify with how difficult that must be for her.
Yeah. Now, of course, we've been hearing, I've been reading this morning that Elizabeth May happens to be on vacation, contemplating, her future with the party. There's a whole bunch of it. I'm sure you're reading some of this, everything from, Elizabeth May would make a great leader of of the NDP. And, there's so much being said here and talked about. What is your sense in terms of, what might happen here? Are you able to comment on that? Like, what are you feeling?
Well, I can comment on my feeling.
Sure, yeah.
It would be a loss, for sure, if Elizabeth were to step down. Clearly, she's done just a remarkable job of leading an extreme minority party through thick and thin for a long time, and has done so admirably. I mean, she's a person who consistently receives awards from her peers in the House of Commons, awards for being the best parliamentarian or an award for being the best orator in the House of Commons. This is an MP who does extraordinary work on behalf of her constituents and on behalf of a fledgling party that could play a much larger role on the Canadian political landscape if we had some form of electoral reform in Canada, and specifically a type of proportional representation. But in any event, I am sad at the prospect of her resigning. I understand that if she feels she needs to do it, then probably better now than later, as the party could go through a healthy process of identifying an interim leader and then making the arrangements for the election of a new leader to replace Elizabeth. But yes, it would be a personal loss for me. I'm a relatively new member of the Green Party, having joined it roughly 21, 22 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I've met her on a number of occasions, including, of course, in Ottawa, and she's a very impressive individual, very skilled. It will be a big loss. I should say, on the other hand, however, there's lots of talent in the Green Party. I observed that talent at the convention. I'm also a member of the shadow cabinet of the Green Party. My responsibility has to do with mental health. And the members of the shadow cabinet for the Green Party are all really skilled, competent people. I'm sure someone who has her or his own assets and remarkable characteristics will emerge eventually to become a replacement leader should Elizabeth decide to step down.
Richard Walsh is with us this morning, Waterloo Green Party candidate. It's 11:42 here on Rogers TV and 570 News. You mentioned, Richard, minority status as a minority party. And you mentioned electoral reform. And so let me ask you about that, because, of course, we've been talking about electoral reform. There's been much that has been said about electoral reform, of course. And, you know, you always get whenever I talk about, especially during election time about, politics and parties, you always get people saying, well, the Green Party just they can't make any inroads with Canadians. They're a minority party. They can't, for whatever reason, make in. Do you think it's what is the reasoning behind that, do you think? As you mentioned, Elizabeth May is the only elected seat. Is it because the Green Party is doing something horribly wrong every election, or does it, in your mind, have to do with our present electoral system?
Well, as I think you might expect, I would say it's the latter, not the former. There's a fundamental flaw in Canada's electoral system, as there is in the United States and as there is in Great Britain. Those are the only three so-called modern or advanced democracies in the world that still employ the first-past-the-post system. It's a horse-racing analogy, the winner-take-all method. Most other so-called advanced democracies in the world employ some type of proportional representation. Outstanding examples include New Zealand and Germany, which means, in effect, that the composition of a parliament consists of individual parties in relation to the proportion of the popular vote those parties have obtained. So let me give you a concrete example. In the last two federal elections in Canada, 2011 and 2015, we had the identical result, except with different parties. In 2011, the Conservatives obtained 39% to 40% of the vote. So did the Liberals in 2015. But they won roughly 60% of the seats, which means that they obtained an absolute majority. They have 100%. They had, the Conservatives in the 2011 election result, 100% of the power. And so the Liberals enjoy 100% of the power with just 60% of the seats and only 40% of the popular vote. We see that, and most people around the world in advanced democracies would see that, as fundamentally undemocratic. It's time that Canada made the shift to a much more modern system, one that is workable, it's effective. It just means that Canadians would have to get used to coalition governments, which are more representative, they're more democratic, they are fairer. If we have members in the House of Commons in Canada representative of the proportion of the vote that their respective parties have obtained.
Do you believe that that this has an impact on voting in general, and why some people might feel disenfranchised or how their vote doesn't count?
Oh, yes. Yes, Eric, for sure. Certainly, I've heard that at the door in the 2015 campaign. I knocked on many doors. I started in April of 2015 with a team of volunteers knocking on doors in Waterloo, and that was a very frequent comment. And at the same time, because of the nature of the electoral system that we have had in Canada, people were reluctant to vote Green because they were terrified of having of electing another Conservative member of Parliament in Waterloo, or re-electing the then MP for Waterloo, and at the same time confirming that the Harper regime would return. The people were petrified of that option, and they decided to vote strategically in massive numbers.
Yeah, yeah, and I certainly hear that as well, talking to people, and of course, I'm not running, and I hear people say, I hear people say, you know, as an example, and I'll just use the Green Party as an example, but I hear this of the NDP and sometimes, you know, other parties as well, where people will say, well, you know, I agree with a lot of the policies that are being put forward, or, you know, I went to a debate and I listened to everybody. I like the, you know, a Green candidate or the NDP candidate, but I know that, you know, here's what the polls are showing, and so it'd be a wasted vote for me to go that way, right? Like,
that's a very common lament.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no question about it. I've heard that for years. I used to run for the New Democrats, and that was my experience then as well.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen, I thank you for taking the time and speaking with us this morning. I appreciate it. Have yourself a great weekend.
And you the same, Eric.
Okay, Richard Walsh right there is the Waterloo candidate with the Green Party. Ran last year, of course, in October in Waterloo. So a couple of things here. Let's get your thoughts on Elizabeth May. You heard what's happening with Elizabeth May. She basically does not agree with something that was supported by the majority of their 250 members that gathered at the party's convention, and they voted in favor of this resolution supporting boycott, divestment, and sanctions, BDS, movement that aims to economically isolate the state of Israel's statement. Quote, she said, "As a leader, I am disappointed that the membership has adopted a policy in favor of a movement that I believe to be polarizing, ineffective, and unhelpful in the quest for peace and security for the peoples of the Middle East," she said. And then she added, quote, that she would continue to express personal opposition to BDS, end quote. Many interviews that she's done as well before going on vacation this week, where she talks about in the Globe and Mail, she airs her frustrations. This is before the convention, by the way, airing her frustrations with the Green Party, saying that, quote, "I don't love being the leader of the Green Party," she said, calling it a thankless task devoid of any fun. She told CBC that the prospect of leaving, however, would be heartbreaking and devastating, and she's taking this this vacation to think things over. So, you know, your thoughts on Elizabeth May and what she said, and do you think that she'll come back and be the leader of the Green Party? And also, you know, let me ask you this: why is the Green Party, why do they have so much trouble making any kind of headway with Canadians? Is it their policies? Is it what they stand for? Or is it because, as you heard Richard say, because of our electoral system, this first past the post? 11:49. We'll be back with your thoughts after this on 570 News.
John Wilson's Weather Guarantee. Weekdays at 7:11. Only on 570 News.
It's time that Canada made the shift to a much more modern system, one that's workable, it's effective. It just means that Canadians would have to get used to coalition governments.
We continue with the Eric Droz Show on 570 News.
All right, welcome back. It is 11:53. That is Richard Walsh. He is with the Green Party of Canada. He was a Waterloo candidate last election. Phone lines are open, 519-570-2545, star 570. On your cell, you can email into eric@570news.com. The Green Party of Canada and their leader, Elizabeth May, seem to be at a bit of a crossroads here after its 250 members, about 250 members, the majority of that gathered at the convention, and they voted in favor of that resolution that supports boycott, divestment, sanctions, BDS again. And this is the statement very quickly here. She says, quote, as leader, I am disappointed that the membership has adopted a policy in favor of a movement that I believe to be polarizing, ineffective, and unhelpful with a quest for peace and security for the people of the Middle East, end quote. And she went on to say that she'll continue to express personal opposition to BDS. Phone lines are open. Here's Jersey Bill on the line. Good morning, Jersey. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I salute Elizabeth May for taking a principal position. You know, when you, it's one reason why I couldn't support any of these left-wing fringe parties, either in the States or here, because they take these positions, which, you know, sort of feel good, but really, you know, don't have any positive effect. Are you going to boycott a country? Why point the finger at Israel? Why not try to boycott Syria? You know, or you know, even though it's probably already being done in effect, but why not state we were against Syria, we're against these other countries as well? It doesn't make any sense, and I think Ms. May understands that, and I think that that's something that I certainly can appreciate.
Yeah, well, and I'm with you on that. I was a little bit baffled and confused as to why this was even something that came to the floor, like Richard was saying, right? Like, why is this? Like, I don't know. I was confused by the whole thing. Why this in particular? And certainly, I mean, as a leader, Jersey, and here's the thing that, you know, she's, and I don't know if you've heard the interviews, but she's talked to the CBC. She's written a piece in the Globe and Mail too, expressing her frustrations. Like, that's got to be a hard thing as a leader when you have, you know, strong feelings towards something. You know, it's a party that is a fringe minority party, if you will. I mean, that's what they are. It's got to be tough. It's got to be so tough for Elizabeth May, because I think that Elizabeth May, my personal feelings on this, when you watch her in debates, you know, when she's allowed in them, by the way, because sometimes she's not even invited. But I think she's a kind of a star politician, if you will. I think she debates very well. I think she's very well spoken. But this is a tough position to be in.
It's really easy for these fringe parties to take these positions, which it makes sort of sense to their ideological fringe supporters, but actually aren't really pushing forward any legitimate kind of policy, because you know they you get you know with, whether it's being anti the it's not so much being anti Israelis or the state of Israel, it's essentially being anti this particular Israeli government. I realize there's some problem with that, but it doesn't make sense to sort of stake out that position. You know, it sort of made sense in a way with the South African government. That was you know, with apartheid, but you know, it doesn't always add anything when a national political party gets involved in these international disputes.
You talked about not being able to vote for these kind of fringe parties, if you will. Is that because you think it's just a clear wasted vote because of first past the post, or is that their policies, if you will, or is it both?
For me, it's policy. It's policy based. You know, I want to support progressive politicians, but I want to support politicians who essentially want to solve problems, not simply take a side of one side or the other in these international disputes, especially, and have a kind of hard line, which from which you can't compromise. If you can't compromise, you can't move forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, good thoughts from you, Jersey. Thanks very much. I wonder how many people are of the same mindset as Jersey, and I wonder how many are of the, hey, they're never going to win, so it's a wasted vote type of thing. And if that is the case, then that has to do with our electoral system. Email comes in here, eric@570news.com. It says the Greens, it's probably because many feel that they are a dog chasing a car. If they ever caught one, they wouldn't know what to do with it. And that's a fair point in terms of, you know, not having much representation or a lot of history to go off of. That's a fair point. Couple of tweets have come in as well. Jason says Elizabeth May is a great leader in debates and will always introduce petitions from enough constituents, even when controversial. Green Party took a big hit when Harper Conservatives eliminated public per vote subsidy. Reasons why Green Party not gaining first past the post and Ontario win Liberals being almost as green. So there you go. All right, interesting thoughts. When we come back, it's 11:58 in other news. Producer Jeff Pickle in studio. Ryan Lochte has apologized for not being clear enough about the robbery that never happened. Why? All right, it's coming up next on 570 News.